Hi, everybody, and welcome back for our second half of our program here, with the third and fourth foundations of mindfulness. Before I start, I just wanted to let you know, if you didn't notice it, that in the chat I pasted in the links to our Buddhist Essentials resources. And also the link for Sim's Dana. So you will have those if you didn't catch them from the agenda screen share. It's really easy to get to them too just by going to the Sim's website. And I think probably you all know that, but the information is there. So I better get going so I have time to finish my talk here. So welcome back from our short break. And I really appreciate Lauren's good introduction getting us started on the first two of these four foundations. So I'm going to continue with the third and the fourth, mindfulness of mental formations and mindfulness of dhammas. And I think both of these two foundations are a bit challenging, but for different reasons. The mental formations are challenging because we're so identified with them. And the fourth foundation of dhammas, because we often aren't really sure what mindfulness of dhammas even really means. So I'll start with the third foundation first, mindfulness of mental formations, or sometimes called mindfulness of mind. And you might be more familiar with this foundation as mindfulness of thoughts and emotions, since that's the way it's often presented in beginning classes and really is a lot of what it is. So this foundation is maybe more challenging to work with, or at least I think it's more challenging to work with than the first foundation of the body, because we tend to identify so strongly with our thoughts and emotions. You know, in a way, we feel like that voice in our head and the things that we feel. You know, that's us. Those are the essence of who we are, even more than our bodies. So we can get very quickly absorbed in them and lose any real sense of mindfulness. And yet, paying attention to them is really important because when we notice our emotions, we notice our thoughts, what's going on in our mind, we really learn a lot about how we react or respond to our different experiences, to what happens to us, to what goes on around us, and how those different reactions and responses maybe lead to more suffering or maybe to less suffering. And I think I'll start first with emotions, since they're kind of a part body and part mind, so they're a little easier to get a grip on than thoughts are. And our emotions, of course, are associated with mental images and memories and thoughts and all of those other kind of activities in the mind, but they're also felt quite strongly in the body often. And when our emotions are triggered by some event or maybe a memory of something that happened in the past, we feel that initial emotion, whatever it might be, you know, sadness or joy, whatever. But then, after we feel that initial emotion, often we keep playing the story behind the emotion over and over in our mind. The story of the event or memory that triggered it, stirring up the emotion again and again. And having some awareness of the stories behind our emotions can be helpful, but if we're so caught up and trapped in that story that we just keep going around and around, trapped in this cycle of reactivity and recurring emotion, it isn't really so helpful. Or sometimes it happens that the emotion is so uncomfortable for us that we do whatever it takes to get away from it. So we distract ourselves, we go numb. Maybe we switch to another emotion we feel more comfortable with. Like, say, if we're afraid, we begin to get angry and blaming so we don't have to feel the fear. Or maybe we start analyzing and problem solving so we go up into our head and don't have to feel the emotion. But the fact that we do feel the emotion in the body really serves us well, even if we might attempt to get away, because when we're in the grip of a strong emotion and caught up in the story that goes with that emotion, we can go to the body and notice what the emotion feels like. And I think you've all had that instruction to do it, but it really is helpful. You know, maybe we feel tightness in the chest or the throat. We feel maybe tremors or queasiness or heat, whatever it might be associated with that emotion. And that really is helpful in the sense that it takes our mind away from being completely caught up in telling and retelling the story or trying to solve the problem associated with the issue. And we just feel the emotion. It might be unpleasant, which is why we often try to get away into our thoughts or rationalizations. But if we can let ourselves just feel the emotion and we realize we can actually be with it, we can sense how gradually it passes away in its own time. And so it really helps us to see that our emotions aren't permanent, that they're natural reactions to our experience. They're there for a while, then they pass, they change. Something else comes up. And I think when we begin to see this, we begin to realize that it's actually okay to feel what we feel. We really don't have to do anything to get rid of it, act it out. We don't have to do anything. We can just feel it. And if the impulses that this emotion triggers are not very helpful ones, then we can take some time to pause. Let our hearts and minds settle before we act or make decisions. Now, naturally, it isn't always so easy to do these things. You know, we aren't always willing. We have our avoidance strategies, as I've mentioned before. And sometimes it's just not possible to pause in the heat of the moment. We just get carried away with our emotions. But if we understand that, you know, really bringing our attention to the body, bringing this mindfulness to actually experiencing the emotion is helpful and useful, and we're willing to try, then we can practice with it. We can do the best we can. And, you know, practicing with it on the cushion is really helpful, because if we're sitting there in meditation, you'll know we can't go out and, you know, hit somebody upside the head or something like that. We can sit and feel it. And then if we do it in our sitting practice, maybe we'll do better in our daily lives too. So I've been talking mainly about unpleasant and difficult emotions, since those are the ones that we most likely feel like we have problems with, we're afraid of, or we want to get rid of them or avoid them. But it's important to be mindful of pleasant emotions too. Now, of course, there are those pleasant emotions that are associated with things that aren't really very good for us, you know, like love affairs we shouldn't have gotten involved in, intoxicants, gambling, all these, you know, kind of bad habits and so forth. And definitely those are situations where it's really to our benefit to feel that wanting or excitement over that behavior and the temptation to act, but then not act. But even in situations where there isn't this kind of problem, we still need to be mindful of pleasant emotions. And one reason is to see their impermanence. We can enjoy them, we can appreciate them, but we can't expect them to be there all the time. And so we really need to have some sense of the normal ups and downs of our experience and emotional lives, so we don't spend all of our time pursuing some sort of an ideal of endless pleasant experience and endless pleasant feelings that is just not going to happen and we can't hang on to. And it's also good to be mindful of pleasant emotions for a maybe more positive and happy reason, so we know that they're part of us too. You know, emotions or mind states like joy, peace, kindness, compassion, when we're mindful of them, we realize that they're possible And we aren't just that angry, fearful, depressed, anxious person we sometimes think we are. And I think, you know, one of the questions was sort of about this tendency to notice the negative, which I think a lot of us have. And so taking a little bit of time to notice the pleasant can really help us to see that this is also a part of our lives and a possibility too. And then there are the thoughts, plans, memories, mental images, so on and so on, that whole huge gamut that absorbs us so much. And it's so hard not to get absorbed and so hard not to identify with all these stories that go on in our minds. But the effort is really worth it, because when we're able to be mindful of our thoughts, there are really some benefits to us. For one thing, if we actually notice what we're saying to ourselves, we can begin to ask, is this really true? You know, that story that comes from somewhere back in our childhood might never have had any validity and may not apply at all to our current situation. Or maybe it had some truth, but it's not the full story. And we can also ask ourselves, you know, is this story useful? Sometimes even if our story is fully justified and the anger and resentment over something that occurred a long time ago is something, you know, of course we would be angry about. Maybe after all this time, those feelings are really just hurting us, and the person that was involved with it, they're long gone. So really, it's our own benefit to kind of forgive and not get so caught up. Or as another example, well, it's good to be prepared for problems that might arise. Continual worry about something that might not even happen doesn't really serve us. And so even though it's not at all an easy or simple practice, simply just being aware of some of these thought patterns and beginning to question them and question our mental habits can really be helpful and loosen their grip on us. And also paying attention to our thoughts can help us to realize that while we feel like they're us, that isn't really true. The Sri Lankan meditation teacher Bhante Gunaratana, whose book, Four Foundations of Mindfulness in Plain English, is on your resource list, says, paying attention to the way each thought arises, remains present, and passes away, we learn to stop the runaway train of one unsatisfactory thought leading to another and another and another. We gain a bit of detachment and understand that we are not our thoughts. In the end, we come to know the mind as it really is. So this mindfulness of mind also includes being aware of qualities of mind or attitudes of mind. You know, noticing if the mind has any hatred or greed or delusion coloring what we're feeling or thinking. And we're also encouraged in the Satipatthana Sutta to notice, maybe especially during our meditation, if the mind is scattered or constricted, or concentrated, or not concentrated, if it's present or not present, and so forth. And so we come to understand what's really going on in our minds, and we're more and more able to see the impersonal nature of it when we begin to look, the way our mind states arise naturally according to conditions, then they pass away. So we begin to see that some of this mind state and thought really is not me, not mine, and not what I am. So finally, we come to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of dhammas. And I think this foundation can be hard to work with because it's kind of confusing what it actually means, and you may come across different explanations and definitions. And one that I noticed when I was looking for material for this talk came from some material on the website of the Insight Meditation South Bay, which is down in the Silicon Valley area. And this said that this fourth foundation integrates the previous three foundations so that finally one watches the totality of physical and mental processes. And it went on to say that the Dhammas were these physical and mental processes that make up our experience and that continually arise and pass away in conjunction with each other and subject to multiple causes and conditions. So the fourth foundation is seeing things in terms of these Dhammas or in terms of physical and mental processes that continually arise and pass away and are subject to causes and conditions. So in a sense, it's like seeing all these different things that make up our experience in alignment with the Buddha's teaching. So it kind of points the meditator to the truth of the way things are. All these different things arising and passing away. Now, that might sound like kind of an esoteric sort of definition. So another way that might be more straightforward to talk about this fourth foundation is to say that it involves seeing for oneself and recognizing the different elements in the Buddha's teaching. And there are specific things we're encouraged to be mindful of in the sutta. The five hindrances, the five aggregates, the six sense doors, the seven factors of awakening, and the four noble truths. So this being mindful of these is much more than just noticing these things and, you know, checking off a list like, oh yeah, I saw that. It really involves working with them and experiencing them and understanding them. And we can explore in different ways. You know, we hear about them from teachers, from books, and reflect on them, kind of like we're doing in this class. We can have specific exercises like we sometimes do when we have homework associated with the Monday nights, where, like, say, maybe we might spend some time particularly noticing the five hindrances as they come up, you know, when there's restlessness or craving or aversion, or maybe noticing the factors of awakening, you know, noticing if there's mindfulness, if there's rapture or joy, if there's tranquility and so forth. But I think that the way that really affects us the most deeply is being aware of these different elements of the teachings when they arise naturally in our practice, when we're not really looking for them, but they just come up, you know, not searching them out, not checking them off, but just knowing when you start to experience them. So you might say this fourth foundation involves being mindfulness of how the Buddha's teachings unfold for each of us in our own direct experience. You know, that kind of experience you have when you say, now I see what he's talking about. Now I know this is really true for me. In one of our Sunday sits in June, Sue's talked about a framework that Philip Moffat has for how we explore the teachings of the Buddha. And he says we reflect on them. We hear about them, we read about them, we think about them. Then we experience them directly in our own lives and in our own practice. And finally, we integrate them. So we can say we truly know these things for ourselves on a deep level, and they're really part of our understanding of the world. And I think that this process of going through this, you know, reflecting, experiencing, and integration is what the fourth foundation of mindfulness is pointing to. Paying attention to those first three foundations so that out of that experience, we see for ourselves the truths of the Buddha's teachings. So let's sit together for just a moment before we continue.